Iran strongly condemns the U.S. seizure of 36 Iranian and regional websites, saying the move is an attempt to silence independent voices. The UN General Assembly condemns a nearly 60-year-old U.S. embargo on Cuba, calling on Washington to end the measure. Russia says it fired warning shots and dropped bombs in the path of a British destroyer after a trespass into Russian waters in the Black Sea. Hello, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to World News. U.S. has seized 36 Iranian and regional media websites, including that of Press TVs. Washington's move has drawn Iran's ire and sparked fierce criticism from activists. Here's the report.
On Tuesday, viewers trying to access Press TV's website were met with a shocking message. This domain has been seized by the United States government. Press TV was not the only site taken down. Iran's Arabic language broadcasting network Al Alam, along with Yemen's Al Masira, faced the same problem. Hours after the domains were seized, the U.S. Department of Justice said as many as 33 Iranian regional websites had been blocked. It said other domains linked to Kataib Hezbollah, a member of Iraq's popular mobilization units, were also made unavailable. The DOJ claimed the seizure was in accordance with U.S. sanction laws. To no one's surprise, Washington's move created huge backlash. In a statement, Press TV denounced the seizure of its website in the strongest terms.
International news network Press TV deplores this measure by the FBI, which has on this occasion targeted it along with a number of other independent media outlets supporting the resistance front. Press TV denounces the U.S. move as a terrorist operation against the global public opinion and views it as an example of banditry and media dictatorship.
Press TV's statement accused Washington of blocking the network's domain due to its precise and substantial coverage of resistant movement activities, particularly by the Palestinian people. Iran's foreign ministry also strongly condemned the seizure of the websites, saying the move was an attempt to silence independent voices. It said Washington's move highlighted its shameful double standards. Earlier, the Iranian government spokesman also denounced the U.S. measure, saying it violates freedom of speech.
The latest measure by the U.S. is against the same principles of free speech, which the country has always been proud of. That means curtailing free speech. The measure means that the U.S. is using tools to prevent the reflection of different viewpoints to the public. The Iranian government condemns this measure.
A flurry of denunciations also came from activists and social media users. Many took to Twitter to vent their anger at what they called an attempt to stifle dissenting voices. This is not the first time Press TV has been targeted by the West. YouTube and Facebook have taken down Press TV's website pages several times in the past. The news network has also been removed from TV broadcasting satellites in Europe, North America, and East Asia, largely due to pressure from the United States and some of its allies. By now, Press TV has long gotten used to facing hurdles in its independent journalistic work and its efforts to give a voice to the voiceless. All these obstructions only make one wonder if the West's declaration of support for free speech is anything more than verbal.
And Yemenis have strongly condemned the U.S. seizure of domains of a number of regional outlets' websites, saying the move amounts to clear violation of international law, which calls for freedom of speech. Our Sana'a correspondent, Abdulatif Al-Washali, has your story.
The U.S. Justice Department committed a new flagrant violation of the freedom of the press and blocked several regional outlets' websites, including the Yemeni channel Al Masira and Iran's Press TV, claiming they are linked to what it calls Iranian disinformation efforts. Yemenis condemned this move, saying it proves that the U.S. calls for freedom of speech are lies.
The seizure of some of the websites affiliated with the resistance front comes amid the media war. The Saudi-led coalition has been trying since the beginning of its war on Yemen to cover up its crimes committed against Yemenis and to mislead world public opinion.
Yemen's Ministry of Information said the U.S. government seizure of a few websites confirmed the strength of the media of the resistance and proved that these websites revealed the true face of the U.S., including its participation in the brutal Saudi war on Yemen.
We condemn the seizure of some websites affiliated with the resistance front. This move shows that these websites have been strong enough to influence the American public opinion by releasing the realities on the ground. It reveals the falsehood of American claims about democracy and freedom of speech. Certainly, there are solutions to this blocking, and the websites will be running again.
Ali Ashra'i, the manager of Al Masira website, said this move revealed the weakness of the U.S., even though it owns thousands of media outlets.
This step reveals the great weakness that the United States is suffering from, even though it owns thousands of websites, satellite channels, newspapers, and radio stations. However, it was unable to withstand a few channels with limited capabilities which convey the truth as it is and express the opinion of the free people in this world.
Experts believe that this step is part of a media war of the U.S. government against the media outlets of the resistance. They said these attacks will persist and the resistance access should be ready for further violations.
Yemenis say the freedom of speech is a fundamental right for all free people of the world, and the United States has no right to deny individuals or communities this right. They believe that such attacks will promote the free media outlets to continue exposing the U.S. policies. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
The Tehran-based Islamic Radios and Television Union, the IRTVU, says the U.S. seizure of 33 Iranian regional news websites is aimed at oppressing nations from disseminating truth. In a statement, the IRTVU described Washington's move as a shameful attack on the rights of people across the world. It said that the U.S., which has long used freedom of expression as a pretext to pressurize independent countries and justify interventions, cannot stand activities of independent media. The statement said the U.S. cannot bring free nations to their knees through propaganda or silence them by dictatorial moves. The union that is part and said that America's hegemony over global technology will soon end. It also pledged to take legal measures against the U.S. decision. The German foreign minister says that he sees a good chance of concluding talks on the revival of the Iran nuclear deal soon, despite major issues to be solved, resolved, that is, between negotiation teams.
As far as the negotiations in Vienna are concerned, they are not easy. That has become clear in recent weeks. There are many technical questions that need to be clarified. Nevertheless, every round of negotiations moves forward step by step, and we assume that in the new environment after the presidential election, there are good opportunities to conclude these negotiations in the foreseeable future.
Heiko Maas was referring to Iran's presidential vote last week, which saw principalist candidate Ebrahim Raisi winning with a landslide. He was speaking at a joint presser with his U.S. counterpart, Antony Blinken, and just hours earlier, a senior Iranian official said that Tehran and Washington have agreed to the removal of all sanctions on Iran's oil, insurance, and shipping sectors. Chief of Staff of the Iranian government, Mahmoud Vaizi, said over 1,000 sanctions imposed by the former U.S. president Donald Trump are to be removed under the current agreement. Tehran has time and again said it will return to compliance with the deal once the U.S. removes all sanctions in a verifiable manner. The United States has imposed an embargo on Cuba for nearly 60 years, despite repetitive condemnations from world bodies, including the United Nations. During our news review program, we got into this issue with our guests. And now welcome everyone to News Review program, where we get in-depth in one of the day's top stories. And now the UN General Assembly has condemned the nearly 60-year-old U.S. embargo on Cuba for a 29th consecutive year. In a resolution, the General Assembly called for the embargo to end by a vote of 184-2. Only Israel voted with the U.S. against the resolution. Cuban Foreign Minister Bruno Rodriguez Padilla told the General Assembly that the embargo, like the coronavirus, kills people and must end. In 2016, the U.S. abstained for the first time in the annual U.N. vote amid a historic rapprochement with Cuba under former President Barack Obama. But diplomatic relations between the two countries soured under President Donald Trump. And joining us now for this conversation is Dan Kovalik, a human rights lawyer, joining us from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And your thoughts on why this needs to be so protracted? You know, Barack Obama tried to put an end to it. Why wasn't that to everyone's liking?
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I think it's these sorts of votes take place every year, and every year they return an overwhelming majority of countries rejecting the illegal U.S. blockade on Cuba. And when I say every country, we mean literally all of them. Every single country voted with Cuba today, apart from the United States and Israel. They were the only two countries to vote against. And there were three abstentions from Colombia, Brazil, and Ukraine. Every single other member state voted against the blockade of Cuba. And these are countries that are, you know, are not political allies, ideological allies of Cuba. Many of those governments would fiercely criticize the official ideology, the official politics of the Cuban government. But people can recognize there's no moral justification for laying siege to a country, because that's what economic blockade is: surrounding the country, telling its partners that they cannot trade, they cannot have relations with that country. And the aim is to starve those people into submission, is to destroy the economy to such an extent as that the people get tired and force a change of government. It's something entirely undemocratic, because it's a foreign power trying to install a different government rather than something that arises from the people. But we've seen today at the UN that the overwhelming, you know, the peoples of the world, the overwhelming majority of countries that form the United Nations reject this cruel, this barbaric measure, which has been imposed on Cuba for decades, and which is now being imposed on Venezuela, being imposed on Iran, being imposed on Palestine by Israel, the only other country to vote with the United States today. So I think that's it's an incredibly important show of support and solidarity for Cuban people.
Thanks for tuning in to this segment of your news review program, and bye-bye for now. Welcome back, everyone. The Russian Defense Ministry says that one of its border patrol ships fired warning shots at a British naval vessel after it deviated from its path in the Black Sea. Ministry said the patrol ship fired shots and an aircraft dropped four bombs after Britain's HMS Defender ventured through Russian waters. It added that the Russian Navy had issued a preliminary warning that weapons will be used in case the passing ship violates Russia's borders. Moscow said that the incident was a blatant provocation by the UK. Incident took place off the coast of Crimea. The UK Ministry of Defense, though, has denied Moscow's claim that any warning shots were fired. It rather claims that the Royal Navy ship was passing through Ukrainian waters in accordance with international law. The U.S. has restricted exports to five Chinese firms, citing alleged human rights violations. Some of those companies added to the U.S. Commerce Department's blacklist are major producers of raw materials used in manufacturing solar panels. The department alleges that the firms are accepting or utilizing forced labor. Restrictions come on top of sanctions imposed by the U.S. Treasury Department against Beijing over alleged human rights violations in the Xinjiang province. China has strongly dismissed the accusations. The U.S. Special Envoy for North Korea, who visited South Korea, says that he'll meet with the North Korean representatives anytime, anywhere, and without preconditions. North Korea, though, has ridiculed the U.S. overture, saying that it will lead to nowhere but disappointment. Frank Smith reports.
The U.S. Special Envoy for North Korea visited South Korea for talks with both his South Korean and Japanese counterparts. Sung Kim then repeated Washington's desire for dialogue with Pyongyang.
Most importantly, we reaffirmed our two countries' shared commitment to pursuing the complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula through diplomacy and dialogue. We took note of the recent statement out of Pyongyang regarding their preparation for dialogue, and we hope to receive a positive response to our proposal for a meeting soon.
U.S. President Joe Biden's new point man on North Korea, however, conditioned any negotiations on U.S.-led sanctions against North Korea remaining in place, which many see as a barrier to kickstarting broader denuclearization talks. Some activists suggest the tension provides the U.S. an excuse to deploy troops to the region and support American weapons producers.
The importance of the Korean Peninsula has increased as the U.S. military pressure and response to China has been strengthened. The traditional diplomatic and security establishment of the U.S. wants to maintain a certain level of conflict on the Korean Peninsula.
North Korean leader Kim Jong-un last week told officials at a party meeting to be prepared for both dialogue and confrontation. Pyongyang later responded to Washington's offer of talks with ridicule, suggesting a wrong interpretation would lead to disappointment.
The U.S. may be paying more attention to North Korea with the appointment of a special envoy in his five-day visit here to South Korea. The question is whether that will translate into greater flexibility from Washington in terms of offering Pyongyang some sanctions relief as North Korea deals with the COVID-19 pandemic and recent natural disasters. Frank Smith, Seoul.
We'll have to leave you with that, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to World News, and goodbye for now.
What about you? IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
the limelight.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott claims that the open border policies of the Biden administration have caused a surge in illegal border crossings. The numbers support Abbott. Dealing with migrants from countries with low vaccination rates has been very hazardous for the Border Patrol. Since the start of the pandemic, more than 8,600 CBP employees have tested positive for COVID-19, and 31 have passed away. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Nolan Rappert Ryder. This article is published under the heading, Biden Failed to Reconcile Border Policy with Science. Hundreds of thousands cross unvaccinated. Stay tuned for the details, please. When Joe Biden was campaigning for the presidency, his plan for securing values as a nation of immigrants included a promise to reverse Trump's immigration enforcement and border security measures. He also promised to follow the science in fighting COVID-19. Biden should have waited until the deadly COVID-19 pandemic was over before reversing Trump's border security measures or, at the very least, implemented scientific protocols at the border, not only to prevent the spread of the virus among migrants who cross the border illegally, but also to prevent them from bringing the virus, including potentially dangerous variants, into the interior of the U.S. Last March, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, determined that admitting certain aliens from Canada and Mexico created a serious danger of bringing COVID-19 into the United States, regardless of the country of origin. Accordingly, it issued an order temporarily prohibiting the admission of such aliens pursuant to its authority under Sections 362 and 365 of the Public Health Service Act, and the order permitted the rapid expulsion of aliens who would otherwise be held in crowded areas while being processed at a port of entry or a border patrol station. These areas were not designed to isolate or permit social distancing of persons who are or may be infected with a highly transmissible disease. Typically, these apply to aliens seeking admission without proper documents and aliens apprehended after making an illegal crossing at a land border. On February 17th, Biden announced an exception for unaccompanied alien children. The Border Patrol apprehends thousands of unaccompanied alien children every month at the border with Mexico. 5,688 in January, 9,269 in February, 18,724 in March, 16,910 in April, and 13,906 in May. Department of Health and Human Services, HHS, statistics indicate that about 75% of the children are between the ages of 15 and 17, but more than 100 unaccompanied children each month this year were under 6 years of age. But it's not just children. Trump established the Migrant Protection Protocol, MPP, program, which has been referred to as the Remain in Mexico policy. It required certain aliens entering or seeking admission to the United States from Mexico, illegally or without proper documentation, to return to Mexico and wait there for the duration of their immigration proceedings. Trump claimed that this provided a safer and more orderly immigration process, which discouraged individuals from taking advantage of immigration system by making a false persecution claim just to be able to enter and remain in the United States. Biden paused that program shortly after taking office on January 20th, allowing around 11,000 of the aliens in the program to enter the United States before ending the program entirely on June 1st. It is too soon to determine how many of the 68,000 people who were returned to Mexico pursuant to this program will be entering the United States to wait there for the duration of their immigration proceedings. No one knows how many new asylum seekers will come now that the program has been ended. In any case, ending the MPP program almost certainly will cause a surge in asylum cases for immigration courts, which already are struggling unsuccessfully with 1,322,938 case backlog. The average wait for a hearing is 934 days. Texas Governor Greg Abbott claims that the open border policies of the Biden administration have caused a surge in illegal border crossings. The numbers support Abbott. Encounters at the southwest border averaged around 70,000 a month in the 4 months before Biden took office, and then rose to 97,640 in February, his first full month in office, to 169,204 in March, to 173,686 in April, and were 172,011 in May. Almost all of them originate from Mexico, Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala. And the COVID-19 vaccination rate in those countries has been very low. As of June 12th, only a very small percentage of their populations had been fully vaccinated. Mexico 12%, Honduras 0.6%, El Salvador 14%, and Guatemala 0.8%. This means that 612,541 illegal crossers were apprehended during the first 4 months of the Biden presidency. The adult and family units making these crossings are not likely to have been vaccinated. Dealing with migrants from countries with low vaccination rates has been very hazardous for the Border Patrol. Since the start of the pandemic, more than 8,600 CBP employees have been tested positive for COVID-19, and 31 have passed away. According to CDC estimates, as of June 11th, 52%, that is about 171 million, of the 328 million people in the United States had received at least one COVID-19 vaccination. But this also means that 48%, that is about 157 million, still have no protection, and resistance to being vaccinated is growing. According to Beth Blair, who helps to run the Johns Hopkins University Coronavirus Resource Center, a growing number of states are slowing or winding down their reports on COVID-19 cases. But COVID-19 is still killing more than 200 people a day in the United States of America. COVID-19 variants are also a problem. Officials are warning people about highly contagious variants that could set back national progress against the pandemic if they become more widespread. The Delta variant rapidly established dominance in the United Kingdom. It currently makes up more than 90% of all COVID-19 cases there. It already makes up more than 6% of the cases in the United States. The real fear is a variant that does not respond to current vaccines. If the Biden administration is going to let people from low vaccination countries into the U.S., he should at least test them for COVID-19 before releasing them. Astonishingly, it's not easy to confirm that's happening, which may be an indication it's not. In March, according to a fact check by an Austin, Texas TV news station, the federal government appeared to have released more than 100 migrants into the interior who later tested positive. According to the TV station, Border Patrol doesn't have the resources to do the testing, so local Texas communities were testing the migrants released to them. The report noted those communities can't stop those migrants from traveling elsewhere. All air passengers over the age of 2 who are coming to the U.S. from a foreign country, including citizens and lawful permanent residents, have to be tested for COVID-19 no more than 3 days before they board their flight to the U.S. Why should the standard be less strict for undocumented aliens coming to the U.S. from countries with very low vaccination rates?
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are
a Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you.
From Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear listeners, thank you so very much for joining us on today's brand new episode of Muslim Lady. It is my absolute honor and pleasure to be with you guys today. And of course, with my wonderful friend and sister, Sister Razia Shamani. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. It's really an honor for me to be here.
We've been talking about self-care and reproductive system hygiene and health, right?
Exactly.
You know it's especially important when Allah decides to talk about it in the Quran, because the Quran is holistic sort of rule book. He doesn't necessarily talk about the details of everything, right? He leaves the rest to the hadith and the seerah of the Ahlul Bayt, alayhim as-salam, and the ma'asumeen. But when he decides to talk about something, you know that, all right, this is some important stuff that he wants you to take notice of. And he says, like you mentioned, Sister Razi, in his holy book, that the reproductive system of a man and a woman is one of his signs, something that those who are thinkers want to reflect upon and seriously realize that, oh my God, God is so awesome.
And also in the ahadith of the noble prophet and his household, we read that, for example, there are so many detailed descriptions of when you want to approach your wife to have your intimate relationship, do this, do that, you know, the foreplay is explained in detail.
Exactly.
So when the prophet talks about it, why should we be shameful
exactly.
to mention something?
When there's a space, a safe, secure, healthy space to talk about it, it needs to be talked about,
exactly.
right? Because at the end of the day, we're all grown adults, we're responsible, we're mature enough, and this is a part, a natural part of our lives.
And it plays a very significant role in the happiness of a couple.
Of a couple, exactly.
And really, if they want to have a good marriage, a good lasting marriage, they have to pay attention. A lot of practicing Muslim men and women, they believe that if they are good Muslims, they have to pray and go to this ziyarah and that ziyarah and go to this
charity.
And then when it comes to the intimate relationship, they're like, no, you know, we are Muslims. As a matter of fact, the noble prophet was such a gentleman with his wives.
He was so tender and so affectionate
and so
courteous.
Caring with regards to the details of his relationship with his
wives.
Because
he understood. I think in essence, he really understood how complex a human being is. And if you neglect one aspect and, like you say, caricaturize another aspect.
This is not religion.
Exactly. And it's not realistic or practical at all. So today we're going to be discussing some important stuff that I recommend our listeners pay special attention to. Whether you're planning to get married, you're already married, you're planning to have kids, you already have kids, you want to teach your kids this stuff. It's all good stuff. So
right. So we're going to talk about the journey of the sperm in a woman's body.
Awesome. Biology 101.
I was actually very stunned and very surprised to know some facts as I was going through some of the information that I was studying for. For instance, did you know that how long can a sperm live? Frozen sperm.
Uh-huh.
How long can it live outside the body of a man?
If it's frozen, a whole years.
Yeah, decades.
Exactly.
You can preserve a frozen sperm in case of any problems. This is God's power. Subhanallah.
50 years to be exact.
50 years.
Yep.
This is a blessing. This is a ni'mah that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given us. That this capacity, the potential for this little tiny particle to live for years and years outside the body of a person, which enables the human species to have, more chances of fertility in case anything happens.
But funnily enough, a woman's egg can only be frozen in store for 10 years.
Wow. And a woman can only have reproduction for a certain amount of years.
Yeah.
But a man...
it's more limitless than a woman.
Exactly.
It's longer than a woman.
So much until I think the end of his life.
As long as he lives,
he can reproduce, and he can.
Which is really interesting. I really want to understand the philosophy and hikmah of that. But that's for another discussion. We're going to be back after a short break, so stay tuned. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Muslim Lady here on IRIB English Radio. Right, so moving on, the reproductive system of a man and a woman is one of science, something that those who are thinkers want to reflect upon and seriously realize that, oh my God, God is so awesome.
When a sperm reaches the reproductive system of a woman, it could take up to 30 minutes. I mean, the shortest it could get. It's been stated from 5 minutes to 30 minutes. It's possible. It's been seen that the sperm can reach the reproductive system.
Mm-hmm.
But a healthy sperm usually, it takes about 8 hours. From 6 to 8 hours to reach the place of fertilization.
Interesting. That's the morning after pills. Okay.
Right. Exactly. And that a healthy sperm can also live in the body of a woman from 2 to 5 days. It varies based on the chromosome of the sperm.
Interesting.
Right. So if it's a girl chromosome, if it's an XX, it's going to stay in the body so much longer.
So upping the chances of the egg being fertilized
as
female.
A girl,
right.
As a female, it's so much more. And if it's an XY chromosome, it can only stay for a shorter amount of time.
I think that's why we have more women in the world than
exactly.
men. Exactly. Right.
That's
just
one
women,
of the reasons.
Potentially, women they have higher chances of being fertilized. And, it's really interesting when you were explaining that.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that one of the smallest particles of our existence, strives and tries so hard for life.
Exactly.
Just battling, going against the current, finding its way to that egg that it needs to fertilize, and
you know how many sperm, with every ejaculation, there are 200 to 300 million sperms, then out of all these millions of sperm,
only
one
fertilizes the egg.
Gets to be the winner of the battle.
And I actually read somewhere that it's the egg that chooses which one, that it has that stronger gravitational pull toward the egg.
Someone was saying...
pulls it toward it.
Someone was saying that it's just like the proposal that happens in the outside world, that so many men come to propose to a girl, to a woman, and she chooses whom to
accept.
Right. This is the same in the body of a woman. She waits in her place, and all these proposals come, and then out of them, the healthiest, the quickest to move wins the battle.
The most perseverant, the most, the strongest, like you said. Okay, and then what happens?
Okay.
So out of the 200 or 300 million sperms that enter a woman's reproductive system, one of it finds its way to the egg through the egg's pull, gravitational pull.
And it opens, and once that egg opens itself to the sperm and they fertilize, it produces a kind of shell around it that will prevent the entrance of any other sperm. So only one can find its way through, and all the others either die on the way, or you know, and inside the egg there's the food. The this egg is going to host the sperm for some time, until they go through the voyage and they get settled in the uterus of a woman. This is amazing.
It's so amazing. Beautifully designed and crafted.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
لقد خلقنا الإنسان في أحسن تقويم.
We have certainly created man in the best of stature.
What happens that sometimes there are cases of infertility is that there are like a lot of reasons, but two of the most important reasons is that there is not enough movement or motion in the sperms. Sometimes there's a problem in the shape of the sperm, like there's no tail or deficiency in tail or the head of the sperm. And sometimes there are not enough number of sperms, like lower than 20 million is considered, a man is considered to
deficient.
Be like infertile. And so he needs help. And there are different ways of treating this infertility. In these cases where there's like a problem with the sperm, either the motion or the count, the number of the sperms, two methods are done. One of them is IUI, which is intrauterine insemination.
Right.
In this IUI,
they extract the sperm from the
man. They extract the sperm and then they inject it in the body of the woman.
Artificially, basically.
Right. And then this is like for people whose problem with, you know, whose infertility problem is not so severe and they need less help. But with people who have more serious, you know, conditions, like their sperm count is very low or the motion of the sperm is like not good enough, usually they use the treatment of IVF, which is in vitro fertilization. In this process, they extract the eggs from the body of the woman, and you know, by with an operation, so the woman has to become like unconscious,
sedated,
and then in a laboratory they take the sperms and then they fertilize
in a tube,
right?
Interesting.
And then they return
it to the woman's body.
Exactly.
Right.
And then there are, you know, I think there's like 30% or less or more chances of like having real like successful fertilization.
Or sometimes they just put it in a surrogate mother if the woman's health is not optimal enough.
Right, exactly.
There are ahkam and fiqhi matters regarding this whole phenomenon, which is not what we're going to discuss on our show. If you guys have any questions regarding this matter, make sure to refer to your marja and your scholar to find out the jurisprudential rulings regarding this process.
So it's incredible that the world of fruits and vegetables, how they can help people with problems. You know, actually, it's a matter of lifestyle as well. That
definitely,
you know, to have the right
diet,
nutrition, and diet in your everyday food.
Thank you so very much, Sister Razia, darling, and thank you to our listeners for being with us on today's episode of Muslim Lady. Until next time, I leave you in the care and protection of the Almighty. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Who is the Lover?
Allah.
Who is Ar-Rahman?
Allah.
Who is Al-Mannan?
La ilaha illallah. Muhammadur Rasulullah. Muhammad is the messenger. To Allah is our return.
The Quran, given by God to Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, more than 1400 years ago, as guidance for humanity. Quran speaks about women.
The Quran teaches the equality of men and women in the eyes of Allah.
Chapter 33, verse 35.
All praise is due to the one and only. He is the master of all creation.
Modesty and chastity are encouraged by the Quran, both for women and for men.
Chapter 24, verses 30 and 31.
He is the sustainer and the maintainer of the whole universe.
God created us from one male and one female and made us into nations and tribes so that we make to know one another, not to despise each other.
Chapter 49, verse 13.
La ilaha illallah, Muhammadur Rasulullah, Muhammad is the messenger, to Allah is our return.
The Quran has indicated worthy women in history just as it has mentioned such men, and has commended them greatly.
Chapter 3, verse 37.
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
the limelight.
New research released recently shows the post-9/11 wars launched by the U.S. military since 2001 have resulted in over 30,000 suicides by active duty American troops and veterans, over four times the number killed in combat operations. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Julia Conley Ryder. This article is published under the heading, Over 30,000 U.S. Veterans of Post-9/11 Wars Have Killed Themselves Since 2001. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. New research released recently shows the post-9/11 wars launched by the U.S. military since 2001 have resulted in over 30,000 suicides by active duty American troops and veterans, over four times the number killed in combat operations. According to Brown University's Cost of War Project, established in 2010 to account for the loss of lives, and taxpayer dollars spent on U.S. wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, an estimated 30,177 veterans and service members have killed themselves over the last nearly two decades, compared with 7,057 members of the military who have been killed in the combat. The findings were compiled from interviews, government data, and secondary literature. The report reveals an increasingly severe crisis, the authors wrote, with the veteran suicide rate per 100,000 people in the U.S. outpacing that of the public. The VA 2020 National Veteran Suicide Prevention Annual Report reveals the suicide rate of veterans overall and adjusted for age and sex is 1.5 times that of the general population, the report reads. This rate is likely a conservative one because, unlike earlier reports, the VA only counts veterans who were federally activated, leaving out reservists and National Guardsmen who were not federally activated. From 2011 to 2020, an estimated 1,193 National Guard members and 1,607 reservists have died by suicide. Data is not available for the first decade after 9/11. Among active duty service members, 5,116 have died by suicide in the past two decades. The suicide rate among active duty service members has historically been lower than that of the general U.S. population, the report noted, revealing a significant shift. The study points to a number of factors that may have contributed to the rise in suicides, including an increase in the use of improvised explosive devices and their association with traumatic brain injuries, exposure to trauma, military culture and training, the wide availability of guns, and stressors associated with returning to civilian life. Multiple deployments was also highlighted as a factor unique to service members post-September 11, 2001. Modern medical advances have also allowed service members to survive physical traumas and return to the front lines for multiple deployments, even though the combination of multiple traumatic exposures, chronic pain, and lasting physical wounds is linked to suicidal behaviors, reads the report. The sheer length of the war has kept service members in the fight longer, providing more opportunities for traumatic exposure. The U.S. government's inability to address the suicide crisis is a significant cost of the U.S. post-9/11 wars, and the result is a mental health crisis among veterans and service members with significant long-term consequences. Thomas Ben Suit III, who authored the report, said many service members don't get the treatment they need, sometimes as a result of trying to hide their struggles. And the paper details how this makes them more vulnerable to suicidal behavior. There was a sense that an active service member would rather lie on a screening to be able to stay in the military. Sue told NBC News, if they have a traumatic brain injury but no other physical injuries, they downplay the injuries to stay in their career. The report comes days after the World Health Organization, WHO, released a study showing that 1 in 100 deaths around the world is the result of suicide, and that in the American region, including the U.S., the rate rose by 17% between 2000 and 2009. We cannot and must not ignore suicide, said Dr. Tedros Adhanom, Director General of WHO. Each one is a tragedy. Our attention to suicide prevention is even more important now. After many months living with COVID-19 pandemic, with many of the risk factors for suicide, job loss, financial stress, and social isolation still very much present. As we come closer to the 20th anniversary of the September 11th attacks, we must reflect on the mental health cost of the global war on terror. The human costs for veterans and service members far outweighs even the most crippling financial cost we have endured to send them to war. Stephanie Saville, co-director of the Cost of War Project, said policymakers in the U.S. must examine and address those factors which are leading greater numbers of service members and veterans to take their own lives. As we come closer to the 20th anniversary of September 11th attacks, we must reflect on the mental health costs of the global war on terror, the report reads. The human cost of the veterans and service members far outweighs even the most crippling financial cost we have endured to send them to war.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.